We're starting a show now called The Mystic Pete Chronicles, and I'm Mystic Pete. Every week, through interviews with thought leaders, visionaries, and creatives, and stories, music, and humor, we'll do some deep ponders in this time of great change, and have some fun. If you'd like more information about today's guests, or to be interviewed for the show yourself, I'm at mysticpete.com. We start the show today with a story by the extraordinary Mike Bone called Family Tradition. I also interviewed John at New Spirit Recovery, which is a wonderful residential detox center in Encino. We also have music and a story by a friend of the station, Drew Stiles, and music for Rosh Hashanah by Nachum. Stay tuned.
Recently, I was pulled into a family discussion with some distant relatives that live in Georgia regarding the COVID-19 vaccination and pandemic. The results were sobering. These were three female first cousins, twice removed, i.e. their grandfather was my first cousin. All are married, two of them have children. All of them are refusing to get vaccinated against COVID-19, and they are adamant about their position. When I attempted to convince them to get vaccinated, they went nuts. I was attacked for being a liberal, being a Democrat, and for living in California. All true, by the way. I was attacked for not attending funerals in Georgia, some of them from 30 years ago, even though I live in California. It was as if I had kicked a beehive. People came out of the woodwork in support of the no vaccination movement. Most of the comments were from women that I am related to, advising everyone that they should, quote, unfriend his AZZ, end quote. When I pointed out the numbers of people that had died from COVID in one day, the number of abortions in the USA was brought up, like the two numbers are connected. One of the original three stated, "There ain't no way Mike Bone is kin to us," and no was spelled K-N-O-W, and "Thank God we grew up right," end quote. Another of the original three stated that I was anti-farmer and that I had questioned, quote, "the importance of farmers and why do we need them? I guess he doesn't own any clothes made out of cotton," end quote. When I asked for an example of anything that I had ever said that was anti-farmer, I was met with crickets. It seems the fact that I supported Stacey Abrams in her campaign for governor of Georgia was enough for me to be labeled as anti-farmer. My cousin also agreed, quote, "ain't no way we are related to that man," end quote. The third stated, "this has to do with those that are vaccinated trying to push it down our throats. Act like we, the unvaccinated, are putting others in harm's way," according to Mike, end quote. I actually think the CDC is saying that. According to my cousin, the vaccine is, quote, effective AFFECTIV for 6 months to a year, and I've did my research. All good to know. It seems that my trying to convince my relatives to get vaccinated is seen as my pushing my family around. Quote, if someone is truly a bone, then act like it, end quote. What the hell does that mean? About every fourth comment was, we love you, we love and miss you. There seems to be a lot of love in the bone family. At one point, there was not enough testosterone in the conversation for my distant cousin, so one of the ladies asked for comments from some male friends. Both responded immediately. One said, quote, take the shot if you want, don't if you don't, they cheated, Trump won, the best is yet to come, end quote. The other posted a series of memes regarding the government and trust issues. Here's another interesting fact that was brought to light. The whole recipe of the vaccines changed directions when Biden was sworn in, end quote. Who knew this? Not me. Another more rational cousin who had COVID stated that it was horrible and, quote, so everyone that gets the vaccine isn't anti-Trump, end quote. There it is. The vaccine developed with Trump's Warp Speed campaign that they are insisting he get credit is seen as anti-Trump by some of the people if you become vaccinated. Amazing. My final statement to these distant family members was that I, quote, hope this plague passes over their home. Good luck, end quote. Scroll forward 4 days. The original person that started this entire dialogue has a child that has been exposed to COVID-19 and must be quarantined. She is still anti-vaccination.
Hi, everybody. My name is Nahum, and I am very excited to share my new song with you, Adam Yesodo. The lyrics are taken from the Jewish high holiday prayer, Unetan Tokef, and I was really inspired by everything that happened in the past year and a half through COVID to connect to your core, to connect to what's important, to connect to what has meaning. And that has been really the inspiration that led me to create the composition for these beautiful lyrics. I hope you enjoy it. You're welcome to check out my website, soullovesmusic.com. For any questions or comments, would love to hear from y'all. Take care, and for those celebrating, have a wonderful, meaningful, and impactful Jewish High Holidays. Shana Tova, and Happy Jewish New Year to all.
הנשבר כחצי יבש וחציץ נובל כצל עובר וכענן קלה וכרוח נושבת וכאבק וכאבק
Hello everybody, Nachum here, and here is the translation to my song from Hebrew, Adam Yesodo. A man's origin is from dust, and his destiny is back to dust. At risk of his life, he earns his bread. He is likened to a broken shard, withering grass, a fading flower, a passing shade, a dissipating cloud, a blowing wind, flying dust, and a fleeting dream.
Today is August 23rd, 2021. I'm with John. We are at a rehab facility. And why don't you just give the brief story about why you're here?
Okay. My name's John. I'm an alcoholic. I've struggled with alcohol and drugs since I was 13 years old. And I...
How old are you now?
24.
Okay.
24 years, past 11 years.
Wow.
I struggled with drugs and alcohol. My main go-to was methamphetamine and alcohol abuse with dabbles of cocaine and other substances. I drank my life away. You know, I was very smart in high school, but because of drugs and alcohol, I never seemed to get above a 2.0 GPA. I was very athletic and knew how to, you know, get what I want and do what I wanted to do to have this great career that I was set up for me to have, and I drank it away by the time I was 18 years old. I drank away my my opportunities that I was given. I had college opportunities that I drank away. I drank away career opportunities that my dad was willing to help me get. I had friends in the family willing to give me jobs right out of high school, and I drank those right down the toilet. So kind of ruined everything I had, you know, just by the time I turned 18. And once everything ruined, I turned even harder into drugs and stopped really drinking. I turned into crack cocaine and cocaine use as well as methamphetamine, and ruined my life. Dropped from 180 pounds to about 120 pounds. I became homeless, living on the street. I wasn't showering. I wasn't doing anything. Wasn't eating food. And all I did was get high. I robbed everybody I couldn't think of robbing to get high. And that turned into running from the law, turned into going in and out of rehab centers, and to where I'm at now, it's like I drank and felt miserable doing so, and I couldn't stop. And I used and felt miserable, and I couldn't stop. And so I had to beg for somebody's help this last time around. I've never had to beg for really help to get into rehab before, but I've exhausted like all my opportunities that I had to beg for something to pan out. You know what I mean? And so I begged and I begged, and then a friend of mine finally caved in and said he can get me in here. And that's how I got to where I'm at now, is getting into this rehab. And being on your knees at 24 years old, not knowing what the hell you're doing with your life, thinking you're gonna die, is the most miserable feeling in the world. And that don't ever want to feel that way again.
Whew, John, this like among the most tragic stories I've ever heard of people's lives. I mean, a lot of opportunities, shot, mm-hmm. homeless.
Mm-hmm. On multiple occasions, homeless.
Homeless?
Yeah, living under bridges, traveling across the country homeless, trying to, you know, find somewhere to, like, fit in and, like, stop doing what I was doing to get. Couldn't seem to stop. I couldn't stop or stay stopped, for that matter.
Trouble with the law?
Trouble with the law.
In jail and stuff?
Been to jail. Multiple times been to jail.
Multiple times?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is some hard living.
Yeah.
Jeez.
I've been to, lost a lot of family along the way. A lot of death. A lot of... I've almost died multiple times. I put myself in a coma when I was 18 years old from an overdose. I overdosed again when I was 23 off of fentanyl. It was not pretty. My life shattered. I'm very, very smart, you know what I mean? Very book smart, very street smart, and I could have gotten somewhere. You know, I still can, it's just harder now. You know, I'm a twice over convicted felon. I have to work twice as hard just to get somewhere. That brings a lot of, like, pain, you know, internally, like, damn. I have to do double the work all because I screwed up, which is fine. It's my mistakes. I can fix them. You know, it's just hard.
Well, when you're a felon, everybody's suspicious of you. Nobody wants to hire you. They don't want to rent an apartment to you.
Yep.
So you can be on a really upward trend. No one wants to give you a break now.
No one wants to give you a break. It's hard to catch a break. It's very hard. Nobody wants to lease you a car. Is my credit score, so I have to go buy outright, try to get an apartment, have to put it in my girlfriend's name, because she's never been in trouble with the law. I have. Yeah, it's just so I can get an apartment.
So here you're having all these struggles, and just to get back to kind of normal life is much harder for you than anybody else because of all this judgment you're getting from society.
Yes.
Like, it's hard to push the reset button.
It's very hard. There's no reset button.
No reset button.
There's no reset button. It's just an upward...
Did you try unplugging it and plugging it in?
It's an upward battle. It's steps I'm going to have to take. You know, I obviously can't drink or use. You know, I have to rely on what works to stay sober. You know, I've seen... dreams come true in sobriety. I've seen my best friend's dreams come true when she got sober and stayed sober. You know, and it's now I have to do that for me. I have dreams, I have goals, I have aspirations that I want to achieve. I have to now stay sober to accomplish them. You know. And it's not just goals, you know, having a family, I have to stay sober for my family. That's another thing. But most of all, I have to stay sober because I want to stay sober. I need to. I die if I don't.
But and now if you're used to, for 11 years, just reaching for something, that's a pattern mm-hmm. that is not easy to interrupt.
Agreed.
I don't even know what to say. I mean, I'm trying to put myself in your shoes of, like, reaching for the bottle, reaching for something to alleviate pain for many, many years. You know, in your brain, it's etched chemically. The cells are built like that.
Yeah.
So it's an epic struggle then. Like a really day by day, being supported and being supported by people and people taking a chance on you.
It's very hard. It is hard. It's the hardest thing to do. It's easy for me to go out and go buy a bottle of alcohol from the store. It's easy for me to go out and find drugs on the corner. It's easy for me to go do that. That's the easiest thing for me to do, to just numb the pain. The hardest thing for me to do would be to face it and to deal with it. And to suck it up and be a man, as some people would say. You know what I mean? And just take on whatever challenges come my way. And there's ways to do it. For me, it's simple. Because I've done it in the past, and I've slipped and I've fallen before again, but I got back up. It's simple. It's for me, it's God. And I just say that because that's where I found my help, you know. And I'm not talking about from the Bible God, I'm talking about a more of a spiritual aspect. And that's what helps, is that's what I turn to whenever I need help now. So I don't, instead of turning to alcohol and drugs, like I'm used to doing, I pray or I meditate. And that usually seems to give me an answer that helps me figure out what I'm going to do with my life.
I suspect that you encounter a lot of well-intentioned people who come off with some kind of advice like, well, John, why don't you just stop taking drugs? Or, you know, like, why don't you just, people? Everybody gets this kind of advice. Why don't you just? But it's not really like that. It's not such a simple, like, oh, okay. Oh, I should just stop taking drugs. Oh, that's easy. Yeah, no, it's like a very complicated situation. Judgment of society is at the top of the list of burdens you have to deal with. Let's go a little deeper here. Let's go a little Freudian. So you were a smart kid. I mean, you were sharp. Was there like a lot of pressures on you, or was there some kind of trauma or incident that kind of drove you into a lot of pain or something? I mean, just speculate for me, what kind of set the foundation to pursue this?
I like to fit in. I like to fit in with everybody. And so, as some people call it, being a chameleon, I can fit in with the athletes, I can fit in with the nerds, I can fit in with the goth, I can fit in with the rebels, I can fit in with, you know, everybody in high school. And so I'm a freshman in high school at 13 years old, and my aunt takes me to this Thanksgiving party that she's having with her wife and their side of the family. And I've always been like a pathological liar when actively using.
Okay.
When actively using drugs or alcohol, I was a pathological liar. That was my go-to.
By the way, I think that's probably normal.
Very normal.
You're just, along with using comes lying.
Yes.
And probably then the next step is stealing.
Stealing, manipulation, all that thing. All those came with it, yes.
Gotcha.
And so when my aunt asked me if I wanted a drink, I said yes. She said, let's call my mother. And I called my mom. My mom told me I can have one beer. Just one. And I told my aunt that my mom said I can get drunk. And my aunt believed me. Because she didn't think I was going to lie to her.
Gotcha.
And I got drunk. And that was the first time ever getting drunk. And I drank to excess like that for the rest of my life up until now. And so, I'm sorry, your question again?
I'm over my head, John. I'm out of my depth here. My question was, speculate on what was the
fitting in.
So underneath it, you know, sometimes somebody's terribly traumatized or attacked, but sometimes it's a social thing. Your pals are drinking or smoking a lot, and you want to have friends.
I wanted to fit in. I was never molested as a child. I was never traumatized. I never had any of those occurrences go on in my life. You know, I was fortunate enough to never have that happen as a kid. But I always wanted people to like me. I always wanted people to fit in. So I became the guy who can steal the bottle of booze from the store so we can all get drunk at lunch during high school. I was that guy. I was like, so I could fit in. Or I was a guy who can get $30 off his mom every day for lunch and buy it. And we can buy marijuana, or we can buy methamphetamine, or we can buy cocaine or crack cocaine, whatever we decided to buy, mushrooms, you know. And I was that guy. And so that made people like me. And so if I bought the stuff, people would like me. I could use some of it with them, and I could feel good and numb away all the shame and the guilt from lying to my mom why I needed the money, lying to my dad why I needed it, or robbing the store. So that's why, that was where my thing what started out as is I just wanted to fit in with you. I wanted you to like me, and you to like me, and you to like me. And
so you have friends and companionship.
Yes.
And some sense of social intimacy and feeling connected.
I had friends, you know, with air quotes around it. People that weren't my friends, they were just using me to get what they wanted, too.
Well, then as you got into more, to put it simply or stupidly, drug culture, then the friends you have are going to be more aggressive or criminals.
Yes.
And then now you're in the criminal world, or you're a criminal.
Yeah. And that's where I got into, as I got older, started hanging out with gang members and got sent to jail for robbing a junkyard for about $1,500 and some tools. And got sent to jail, and I met all these gang members, and I got connected with phone numbers so that way I can get, when I got out, I had drug dealers that I can reach out to, and if they needed me to do something, I could do it, because I already dropped out of high school, because what's the point anymore? You know, I was 18 years old, I had literally 2 credits left to go to graduate, and I dropped out. And so I get out of jail, these people get out of jail, and I'm hanging around a bunch of criminals, a bunch of thieves, and bank robbers, and so I've seen people try to kill people before in the past, and so attempted murderers, carjackers, and those were my people.
These are people you're hanging out with.
People I'm hanging
out
with.
You're now in a criminal
world.
Well, that's what it is. That's your life now.
And so when I want to get high and I don't have money to get drugs, they want me to rob a place. I go rob the place so I can get drugs. So I started working for them.
Now you're in a gang.
Now I'm in a gang. And that's what I did.
And there's things that are expected of you.
Yep.
You have to show your loyalty.
Yep.
When you're told to do something, you do it.
Do it. And there are repercussions if you don't.
You will be attacked if you don't follow directions.
Been jumped for not obeying rules before.
And then newcomers,
jump them in.
You have to enforce it on them.
Yep.
So it continues. It keeps spiraling out. It's endless.
And it doesn't stop. And it's stupid. We did it for no reason. It got me nowhere. You know, I had all these goals when I was younger to be these great things, to do these great things, and I'm 24, nothing to my name, you know. And I'm sober, though.
Wow, John. It's a pretty intense story, man. I mean, that's a hard life.
Huh?
And it's hard to pull out of, because everybody you know is, like, if you want to hang out with your old pals, you're back in. So you almost have to start off, have a whole new bunch of friends, or I don't know. It's just not an easy, like, why don't you just, you know?
I cut off all communications with everybody I used to hang out with. There's no friendships, there's nothing left. Because I know people, places, and things are, like, bad for me. Going to the same spot, doing the same thing, hanging out with the same people is going to get me the same results.
There's the neural patterns, there's the patterns in your cells and so forth, and there's the patterns with other people.
Yeah.
You're hanging with them. Mm-hmm. Here, have a hit. I mean, it's just like...
Have a hit, have a rock, have...
And then you're back in.
I'm back in.
20 minutes later.
And all of this is for nothing, you know. And so I get rid of the external first. And
gotcha.
Now it's time to work on internal.
Sort out some stuff on the inside.
Yep. Sort out some things on
regrets,
the inside.
Regrets, pain, loss of, I don't know, all these parts of life that you could have been living.
Yep.
I mean, not to put any kind of silver lining on it, but you've had a lot of intense living too. I mean, you've been places most people maybe see in the movies or something.
Yeah.
Maybe it's pain, you know, but you know things.
I know.
Maybe you're choosing to say goodbye to that because you've had enough of it. You know enough pain.
I don't want to live that way. I just want to be happy. You're not happy when you do those things, when you live that way. may act it. The money's nice, but you're not happy.
I know a lot of people in the rehab community, or, you know, counselors and so forth, have been addicts themselves. So what they want to do now is help others.
Yeah.
They understand.
Amen.
So, and there's also that sympathy that they have for their clients and patients. And they fit, everybody feels like we're all trying to pull out of this together.
Yeah.
A while back, you told me about some kind of gang war you started, or city war. You don't have to get into this, but
I was 18, and I was in this gang, and there was a rival gang that also lived in the same town that we had issues with going on presently at the time. I'm not going to say exactly what the issues were, but the things were going on, and it needed to stop. And so, my friend, he went by White Boy, got a hold of somebody else in the rival gang and said, we're going to all meet up and we're going at it. And so we met up, and there were knives, guns, hammers, wrenches, brass knuckles, screwdrivers, bare fist, bring whatever you can. We're fighting. And we fought. And we fought for a decent amount of time. People were getting stabbed.
20 or 30 people kind of thing?
Each side. Oh, 20 or 30 people on each side. And we were getting stabbed. We were getting shot at. It was not pretty. You know, there are a couple people that have died. People got stabbed. You know, it wasn't the best result.
Whew.
So.
And looking back, was some great thing accomplished? Did life change? Was honor restored?
We went right back to the same stuff. Nothing changed.
It was all for nothing.
It was all for nothing.
Just a bunch of angry guys.
Yep. Angry men and women fighting it out.
Fair enough. Why don't we just have a moment where you take a look at the future and your dream, and what is the dream?
I don't know.
Like the answer in the future.
Permanent sobriety, obviously, is what my goal for is my permanent goal. It's my like lifelong goal. But if I can see myself in 7 to 10 years from now, I have 4 kids. I want them all with me in the same house. Married to my girlfriend that I'm currently with. I want to own my own rehabilitation center for drug addicts and alcoholics. I want to own my own.
Oh, helping other people. There we go.
Which I would be a part of on a daily basis. I would lead one of the groups that they do on a daily basis. I see myself owning some sober livings as well that they can go to, you know. Some of them take state insurance, some of them take regular insurance, so that way those people, or some of them take people who don't have insurance at all, so that way they can still get the help they need. So that way you can still be taken care of. So that way, just because you're over 26 years old and you're not on mom and dad's insurance anymore and you have nowhere to go, I can help you out. Or if you are on mom's and dad's insurance, I can still help you out. I just like to help people, and that's my go-to, if I can help people. So that's where I see myself in 10 years, happy. I'm not worried about the money, I'm not worried about anything else, but I'm free, I have peace, and I have happiness. It's what I want. So.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Fist bump. Boom.
1, 2, 3. I got a new tambourine. It's silver, gold, and green. It's got this jangling ring and it brightens up my thing. So much that it's set to sing. 7 wonders, they say. 7 wonders in the world, they say. Open up your ears and get to see one each and every day. 7 wonders, they say. 7 wonders in the world, they say, yeah. Open up your heart, you get to be one each and every day. I took a walk by the shore. Oh man, that river shall flow. It's got this swooshy swang, it sweetens up my swag. So much that it's had to say. Seven wonders, they say. Seven wonders in the world, they say. Open up a ears, you get to see one each and every day. Seven wonders, they say. Seven wonders in the world, they say, yeah. Open up a heart, you get to be one each and every day. I wrote this song here today. It wrote itself, I should say. Ooh, yeah. It's by a false little man and he falls land away. So much that he said to say. Hey, yeah, yeah, yeah. Seven wonders, they say. Seven wonders in the world, they say. Open up our ears and get to see one each and every day. Seven wonders, they say. Seven wonders in the world, they say. Open up our heart and get to be one each and every day. Seven wonders, they say. Yeah, yeah, yeah. In the world, they say. Open up our heart and get to be one each and every day. Seven wonders, they say. Say, yeah, 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 yeah. In the world. Open up your heart, you get to be one each and every day. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Hello, hello, what's up, what's up? My name is Drew Styles, and I'm working on a feel-good, fun healing project called the Jesus Guacamole Project. It arrived while I was healing in Switzerland, or perhaps the word awakening is more appropriate. And this awakening experience was preceded by 12 years of intense work and what we call, quote, sickness, end quote. I played music when I was young, and when I healed, it was accompanied by mystical visions while music was arriving in batches of 3 to 5 songs, like downloads. This took place for 1 year. Along with the music, there were ideas and concepts for other aspects of the project. All of it interwoven together and themed, and including a band from outer space called Jesus Guacamole. And the name Jesus Guacamole, to me, means, among other things, that the divine is in the everyday, even in the guacamole. But it's all playful and fun, sort of like Dr. Seuss meets Disney meets Marvel. There are comic books and new products and an event called A Love Letter to the World, which is meant to be a day of no good guys or bad guys, one day to share expressions of love for all life forms, recognizing everyone is doing the best they can with what they got, and that the stuff we're all looking for and all we do, and the stuff that heals everything, is this free, anonymous stuff we call love, the animating power of all existence. And so my relationship with music started in that I picked it up naturally because I just loved music. I still do. And I didn't know if I was good at it, but I started bands in my 20s. I had learned how to play bass and a little guitar from playing along to records. And so I started these bands and audiences showed up and some deals came, you know, much to my surprise, and it was a lot of fun. And I didn't understand at the time that channeling music was a unique quality. I didn't take songwriting seriously. But when I started bands, people were amazed at how I could pick up a song out of nowhere. I probably got the gift from sitting in bands with my dad, who was a professional trumpet player, and from listening to music all the time, starting with the Beatles and Jackson 5, which is exactly what this new music sounds like, along with there being a trumpet melody on every song. So my first influences came back. So I played in bands in my 20s, and then I did some solo music and some soundtrack stuff. And around the year 2000, while living here in Los Angeles, I was having severe fatigue. It felt like metal was in my bones. I was super healthy otherwise, so it didn't make any sense. I went to doctors with no answer and eventually lost the ability to function normally or to work or play music. I lived the next 8 years in constant suffering, trying to self-heal and to survive financially while I was doing so. And what I found is that there is nowhere to go in our culture when you get sick. So I worked full-time. Sometimes I would even lose consciousness on the job. And while I was living like a yogi the rest of the time with meditation and inner purification, supplements and nutrition, reading any books on healing I could find, I was in so much pain that I'd wake up from my own screaming some nights. I would literally wake up from howling in despair. It was a living nightmare, and I could not believe it. And by 2008, I was totally fed up with the work I was doing, which was blocking all my creativity and my ability to channel music, which is more than just songwriting. There are movements that sort of keep me alive. It's not like I sit down with a quill and decide to compose a song for people or something like that. This is like these movements happen through me that somehow keep me connected with Source or God or infinite intelligence. So I was really depressed and half crazy and still not feeling 100% after years of healing work, 8 years. And I had been researching backpacking and busking in Europe, considering moving there to play music again. And MySpace was popular at the time, and I had put some old music up there. And people who liked my songs were inviting me to visit places like France, Iceland, and Switzerland. So I took down my whole life, I put my belongings in storage, and I went to Europe. I had no plan except to go to Europe. I explored a little bit, and I felt most welcomed in Switzerland. A song of mine had ended up in the Zurich Music Conference, and it was also getting radio play, and I had gigs, and I met a bunch of artists and musicians there, and I felt at home. And the country of Switzerland itself, the elegant, preserved harmony of nature, seemed to have pulled me there, and it felt right, so I began to try to move there. And so I was back in the States again, staying in Brooklyn, while I was planning another trip back to Switzerland, and I got sick all over again, but way worse. I still had no idea what had caused it all, but this time the timing of it was unmistakable in that I had just gone to a dentist, and immediately after the appointment, I was really sick. It felt like I had broken glass in my bones, and I was extremely fatigued. My skin turned white. I had these big bags under my eyes. And at that dental visit, I had had mercury amalgam fillings removed without protection, and pieces of the fillings were falling down my throat. And at the time, I didn't know they had mercury in them. I would have called them my silver fillings. And along with that, I had another root canal done. And so I was in full momentum to move to Switzerland. And I went anyway, and my health was so bad. I was anemic, I was losing my vision, and I completely crashed in Switzerland, luckily, because the Swiss healthcare system caught me. At that point, I had been having symptoms for 10 years total, and I started going to doctors with the same result, a quick consultation and shuffled out, just like in America. And then, through a friend's recommendation, I found this one guy on Lake Zurich, Dr. Van Limburg Stirum at the Seegarten Clinic, and he suspected he knew what was going on. He asked me questions, and he listened to the answers, and he had some ideas for some tests, but on my teeth mostly, which I had never heard of. He showed me two other patients he had healed completely, each of them by removing one root canal treated tooth. He also suspected metals toxicity, and after some tests, he found that I was high in lead, mercury, and aluminum. There are reasons for all of it. I won't go into all the details except to say I found out later that all of this was function, that everything is, and that I was being led to a massive healing and an awakening through this process. So it didn't seem to make any sense at all at the time. But before all of the health problems started, I had been doing the St. Francis prayer. I'm not a Christian, but I love that prayer, to be an instrument for love. And I did it with all my heart, all my soul, everything I had. I really meant it. And those years ended up being the answer to my request to be purified. I just didn't know it at the time. So after Dr. Sturm told me what to do, I had all my fillings removed safely. I did infusions for mercury chelation with DMPS. And I had the root canal treated teeth removed one at a time, along with cavitation surgeries in my jawbone. Bit by bit, very slowly, I started having improvement. I also did every other possible thing that I could to heal. I did supplementation, saunas, I saw spiritual healers, I listened to guided meditations, podcasts on healing, lectures by Ram Dass, I read books by Eckhart Tolle, Pema Chodron, Osho, Yogananda, I read the Bhagavad Gita, I read the Tao, I read the Seth books and Science and Health, I meditated, I prayed. I also walked along the Limmat River in Switzerland every day in this ancient healing town where I landed called Baden, which means baths. And it turns out the Romans used to travel to this little town for the natural thermal waters. And the country itself is so quiet and clean and stable. It was exactly what I needed to reconnect with Earth. And Switzerland also taught me how to relax, essential for healing, as I'd forgotten how to in America. At the end of all the dental treatments, I did 4 infusions to remove mercury and lead, and this pushed me over the edge with healing. When I did these 4 infusions, I added something to remove lead, metals chelator, along with mercury. And I was waking up at night having healing visions on the days of these infusions. During one of them, I woke up at about 3 a.m., and I was floating upstairs. It was like a universal celebration, like completing a video game or something. And my parents, who aren't alive anymore, were there off to my side, crying and cheering me on as I was welcomed at the top of these stairs by people made of light. And around this time, I heard an interview with Donovan, the 60s singer, where he was asked how to write songs. And he recommended playing 2 chords over and over until they're your own. I picked up my guitar, and after 12 years of no songs showing up, a new song started coming. I was flooded in goosebumps that weren't going away. Tears were falling down my face, and I was seeing diamonds coming out of my eyes. And that song, called Do You, started the dam burst. It was like having a waterfall of golden light pouring through my head and body, turning into song after song after song. And this went on for a year of these incredible, beautiful, healing, magic songs that seemed to be written by the universe through me after I did the St. Francis prayer, went through 12 years of, I guess, Dark Night of the Soul or Fires of Purification, in order to have that 1 year experience. And the song started creating an order and eventually became one work of transformation called The Magic Key. They're all fun, feel-good, grooving tracks, sort of Jackson 5 meets the Beatles, and every one of them has a trumpet melody that came to me, inspired, no doubt, by my dad when I was a kid. The whole work felt downloaded, like I was just there for it. And it was literally one of the greatest experiences, if not the greatest experience I've ever had being alive. All the dots connected on my whole life, and I could finally see the perfection of all that had happened. Being sick for me was like winter. Things looked dead, but much was happening below the surface, preparing for spring. And I had made it. I really didn't think I would make it. It was like climbing a mountain or being in a marathon. And at the time I healed, I was so traumatized. It had been such a long, lonely experience. And now I was back. So that's how this whole work came to me, along with the other components of the project. And so now I'm back in LA creating the work and getting bands together to perform it. all of them called variations of Jesus Guacamole, or a play on the title, such as JGNY for the guys in New York who are starting a band, or my version of the band is Drew's Jesus Guacamole. And it's all fun, feel good, it's sort of Dr. Seuss meets Disney meets Marvel. And the term Jesus Guacamole is meant to imply that the divine is in the everyday, even in the guacamole. And it's meant to sound like a person, like Jay-Z and Dr. Seuss, Jesus. But when you see the actual band, the star isn't one person, the star is love, the star is harmony, the star is the cooperation that happens among the members of the band, who are air guacamole, fire guacamole, water guacamole, and earth guacamole. And so my band is playing in Venice lately. You can find me on Instagram at Jesus Guacamole. That's J-A-Y-Z-E-U-S-S. And right there, the name should come in. J-A-Y-Z-E-U-S-S. G-U-A-C-K-A-M-O-L-E-Y. Jesus Guacamole. And yeah, so I wanted to thank Mystic Pete for helping the story come out of me. When I saw your name, Mystic Pete, I knew that you were the right person to share this with. It's weird talking about mystical experiences in our material-based culture. I've been having all kinds of mystical experiences since I was a kid, and I never told anybody about them until now. It's good to come out and represent who I really am with somebody who understands what I'm talking about. And more than anything, I just want to let people know how to heal if anyone is unnecessarily suffering. Not to take away from anybody if they're having a dark night of the soul and it's necessary, but if people are sick for no reason and they can get better, Seegarten Clinic with Dr. Van Limburg Stirum in Switzerland helped me, and he has the information on how to heal the same way. And with a love letter to the world, perhaps we can create a worldwide event every year where people can share any expression of love for all life forms on Earth, and we can have a global celebration. We don't have to figure it all out, how, you know, where to send things and how to fix things. The sun shines and it knows where to go, and when it rains, the water knows where to go. So perhaps all we have to do is allow love to flow through us, and any excuse to open to allow that to happen will do. And love letter is a way to love without having to start with a problem or a cause or good guys or bad guys. Just love for love's sake. Love being the stuff that heals everything. It's a shared planet, and we're all in this together, no matter the competition or the limited ideas about what we're doing here. So thank you again, Mystic Pete. You helped this whole thing come out. I think I even made it in less than 20 minutes. The original version was 1 hour, so you helped me get it down. So yeah, man, thank you so much, and a pleasure talking with you.
Gifts, it gives you fun with it. inside, outside, it's all the same old thing.
For me, for you,
the world needs lovers too.
For me, for you,
because it matters too.
For me, for you,
the world needs lovers too.
For me, for you.
It's everything
for me, for you,
and 'cause it's no thing.
Coming to the end of the show called The Mystic Pete Chronicles. You can reach me at mysticpete.com and Mystic Pete on social media. We started today's show with a story by Mike Bone, Family Tradition. Then I interviewed John at New Spirit Recovery. It's a wonderful residential detox center in Encino. We also heard music for Rosh Hashanah by Nachum. And music by Drew Stiles. That was Seven Wonders and Friend. Thanks so much for listening. Shana Tova!